first song that America saw the Beatles play live on TV.
Sharing the personal stories.
There's a documentary aspect to Penny Lane. It's still in my ears and in my eyes.
Behind 10 songs that shaped his life and career.
I was just sitting there in this little bare room thinking of John and realising I'd lost him.
Paul McCartney, Inside the Songs. Part of Front Row, beginning next Monday night at 7:15 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
And there's more from Paul McCartney this weekend as he tells John Wilson about his cultural inspirations. This Cultural Life is on Saturday night at 7:15. Back to this evening, and the comedian Dilisa Chaponda continues with his new series in which he looks at divisive global issues and how we deal with them. Today he's talking about tolerance and how we put up with each other. This is Dilisa Chaponda, Citizen of Nowhere.
We must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together.
He was saying horrible things. Will never go away.
We have to learn to tolerate each other.
No one is born hating another person. Hatred and intolerance have to be learned.
If you believe you're a citizen of the world, you're a citizen of nowhere.
Citizen of nowhere.
I'm out of here, girlfriend.
Citizen of nowhere.
Episode 2.
Tolerance and coexistence.
Clicking the little red thing.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, my phone's off.
Yeah?
I'm ready to go.
And start.
This episode is very much about coexisting with people.
Okay.
And coping with people with different attitudes.
Got it.
There's going to be some stand-up comedy. It's also going to have an interview with this distinguished guest, Jennifer Billick, a woman who has worked for Amnesty International and many other illustrious companies. Also, I know her because we once coexisted. She is my ex-girlfriend. We dated for many years. And this may be a very misguided interview to do. And in fact, if my current girlfriend is listening, this is on Zoom. We're not in the same room. Calm down. Now, I have read your intro. Could you read my intro?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, this is the intro to the show. I'm putting it in the chat.
Okay.
So here we go.
Okay, you want me to read the whole thing?
Yes.
Got it.
Except for the words, reads intro.
Welcome, the citizen of nowhere, Dilisa Chaponda. A wise, insightful, handsome, godlike specimen of a man who will single-handedly solve the world's problems.
You actually said it!
I have to admit, the godlike specimen part?
Hey, I didn't say the god of what?
Okay.
There's some less impressive gods, if you look at it.
Yes, that's very true.
Hephaestus and people like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying I'm Zeus.
But Hephaestus had a hot, hot wife.
Exactly. So being alone during lockdown, I found out to my shock and horror, I don't really like my own company that much. I bore myself. I calculated there was one point where I realized I had been single and hadn't touched another human being for 61 days. And all I would do, all the government said to keep me sane is go for a little mental health walk. Go for a little mental health walk, walk back and forth in the park, go home, and that's gonna cheer me up. The world was possibly ending. I was lonely and full of despair. A mental health walk was not gonna cut it. I needed mental health making love. That's what I needed. No, I'll never say that on the radio. So let's do that one again. That was just a cry from the heart. Let's do it better. Too much honesty. Okay, thanks. I'm trying to think of a better word. Okay. A mental health walk just wasn't cutting it. I needed a mental health cuddle. It's kind of, it's not funny, but it's it gets a reaction. I think we'll stick with cuddle. You often will hear very famous people who are like A-list celebrity going on about how they hate being recognized. But when you're like at my level, which is like C-list, D-list, it's awesome. Because it doesn't happen very often. And whenever it does, it makes you happy. So mid-lockdown, when I was depressed, I've got to admit this, I would go on mental health walks and try and be recognized. so that someone would talk to me. And I'd actually try and make it easier for them to recognize me. So my big break in the UK was when I did Britain's Got Talent. I started walking on my mental health walks in my Britain's Got Talent jacket. And I'd be walking, throwing confetti around. And one time I was on a mental health walk and a certain person was like, hey, are you that comedian? And I was like, yes, I am. Yes, I am. And he said, oh, I love your comedy. I used to watch you in prison. But I had a chat with this ex-convict and he said something really interesting to me. He said that he felt that the pandemic was worse than being in prison. And I was like, dude, I don't know what kind of pandemic you're having, but at least I know how all my showers are going to end. This is not worse than prison. And he said, no, day to day, maybe it's easier. But the reason why he says it's worse was that when he was in prison, he knew the end date. And he could just focus on the day he's getting out, no matter how bad it got. It was a constantly shifting reality that got to him. Right? And the queuing outside Tesco's also really bothered him. It's ironic, really. It was wearing a mask that got him in prison as soon as he... So being alone during lockdown, I called an ex and I asked them for advice. How did you put up with me? I have such trouble.
It's you every day, you in the mirror. Your voice, your breathing, your habits.
Yes. We had very different pandemics. You had your dog and your child, mm-hmm. and I had my walls.
I actually really appreciated the fact that there was a dog and my son, because at least it wasn't me with the walls. I can imagine if I was alone, that would have been really hard.
Yes, I was alone. And then I went from alone to sharing my flat with a really intense person. And it was much better than being alone. But it was not without difficulties.
Yes.
Actually, I was entirely alone for the first 4 months of lockdown, but at this point, it changed. So I have a female friend who moved in with someone at the beginning of lockdown who turned out to be a horrible person. And when she told me about it, I was like, you have to move. And she was like, I can't. I'm not earning any money. I have nowhere to go. And I said, okay, fine, move in with me. I live in a small place, but we'll make it work. But when she was moving in, I immediately realized the potential problem. Let me reiterate. I had not touched another human being in 4 months. And then a beautiful 27-year-old model slash actress moves in with me. And when she moved in and was putting down her luggage, I realized that during lockdown, my eyes had developed the ability to zoom in. And I was very worried because the last thing she needs is me watching her walking around going, oh, so pretty. Oh. And what could I do? I couldn't handle the constant stream of titillation, but I also couldn't be like, hey, you can move in with me. Welcome to the home, but you have to wear this burqa. I couldn't do this. And also, it's not her problem. It's my problem. It's my mind. It's my imaginings. She should be comfortable to twerk up and down the flat. And look, I called a friend of mine. And I didn't actually think I'd do anything inappropriate, but I still was a bit stressed about it. And I was like, how do I cope with this? How do I cope with this frustration? How do I sleep? And he said, look, you're an idiot. You're a comedian. Every time you feel sexual frustration or any temptation, just write a joke. Put it into your art. Turn it into a positive thing. And this is what I did, which is why this recording is going to be 17 hours. This is a very odd question to ask, but what was it like living with me? So Jennifer is not the person I was living with during the pandemic. No. I lived with her when I was 20. We were both at university at the time.
But
and
yeah.
We did not live in luxury.
We did not. We lived in a flat that is the size of my bathroom.
Yes.
A single mattress, a little kitchen unit, and a shower.
We're living essentially in a box. And also, the lease only allowed one person to be in that flat.
Yes.
So you had to sneak in?
Yes. I had to sneak into the flat. We had a code worked out, and this is the time of pager, so I would page you from the phone box And then if it was clear, you would like come out the door and waved for me to like sneak in there.
We lived like spies. We basically lived like spies. We had codes. We tried to make sure that the Gestapo didn't get you.
Yes.
Very bizarre way to live. But I remember it very fondly.
Yeah. What I remember the most is Buffy the Vampire Slayer marathons and lots of laughter and fun. I will say what was hard about it living with you is because you're very nocturnal. Yes. And your creative time is from 11 p.m. till 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yes.
Which, when you're living in that style apartment, there's no real good way to hide. So I remember having to sleep under the covers. And then you had like a little nightlight.
Trying to type quietly.
Trying to type. Which is not a thing. You cannot type quietly. But yes, you were trying to type quietly. And I would be super grouchy at you going, what the heck is going on?
I'm working on my novel.
Yes. And I remember a couple times I was like, I hope this is worth it.
Yes, indeed. Indeed, indeed. It was very bizarre. I mean,
yeah,
you really get to know someone really well if you have to coexist in that fashion.
Yeah, definitely. And like the level of stress, right?
Yes. The person who I'm complaining about in this episode was an American who took over some of my flat during the pandemic. And we were trapped together in a place bigger than our tiny apartment, but it felt smaller. She stayed with me for 5 months and then she left to America, but we got along really great. It was sometimes stressful, sometimes complicated, but it was fine. One of the big things though is that she was very young and she was woker than me. It was really weird because her wokeness made me very angry. Even though I agree with practically everything she believes. And I don't understand why it bothered me so much. And it was just that she yells about everything with an evangelical fervor. It was very odd living with a white person who talked more about the struggles of black people than I did. And she was always talking about the action of colonizers, never alert to the irony that she was currently colonizing my flat. I had an American who had taken my land and my food and unfortunately didn't give me syphilis. There are people who consider themselves woke.
Yes.
Do you know any woke people?
Yes.
Are you exposed to the woke?
Yes.
How do you cope with the woke? Do you get along with the woke? Do you struggle with the woke? Are you amused by the woke?
I definitely am. Having worked for Amnesty International, I'm very liberal-minded to begin with, right? I believe in human rights. I believe in freedom of expression massively. So I'm definitely very, very sympathetic. I do think it goes sometimes a bit too far, because the whole point is you have freedom of expression. It means that you can have an honest, actual debate with people. It doesn't mean that you have to agree with them. I mean, we don't even agree on what clothes to wear together at the same time. Like, it's not like you and I are wearing the same clothes, Deliso.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. I think what we're seeing is a lot of extremism on lots of different sides. So whether you identify as being woke or being a Trump supporter or, you know, lots of stereotypes that people are using these days, I don't agree with the usage of the stereotypes because I think it's pigeonholing us quite significantly. And that's what's hurting
the labels,
society.
Yes, the labels.
It's the labels. It's the labels. And as soon as you label somebody woke or Trump supporter, instantaneously, it creates a dynamic where you can't have freedom of expression, like have a genuine debate. It's freedom of expression doesn't mean you agree with me. Freedom of expression means we have a choice and we talk about it.
Yes. I listened to her get into an argument with another woke friend. Have you ever listened to two woke people argue? It's just depressing. This was the kind of language being used. She said, I feel that you are not validating my truth. And there have been multiple microaggressions directed my way. And her friend replied, if you feel that, it's because you've been gaslighting me. And there has been toxic behavior all day. And I was like, just call her a bitch. Spit in her face. What I'm trying to get at the bottom of, too, is that I agree with the woke people on most things.
Yes, agree. Absolutely.
But something about them really bothers me. And I don't know what it is, because I was like, I agree with you. And I think it might be that I grew up where we all agreed the world isn't fair. Let's try to live and cope and slowly make it better. as opposed to yelling about it, which I don't think actually changes anything.
I do think you have to have a conversation with people who you disagree with and find where the interim and the medium point is to be able to move forward. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. Life is hard.
It is.
Life is really, really hard a lot of days.
Now, it's fascinating, right? I agree with the worldview of woke people, but part of the reason they irritate me is also the idea of tending to people's fragility. Like trying to create safe spaces and trying to make kids grow up without any triggers. That won't prepare them for the world. If I run a school, it would have trap doors and booby traps. Basically, I think schools should be set up to be like an episode of The Crystal Maze. You need to prepare your child for real life at the No Safe Space Academy. A place that brags about how we have failed 3 health and safety checks. And one student has been missing for 3 days, and here's the best thing, we haven't looked for him.
What is the point when you realize you cannot coexist with someone? Because it's always a sacrifice. You've invested time, sometimes you've invested years.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like you've been paying off a mortgage. What is the thing that makes you decide for self-preservation or something? You've got to just be like, no, I'm out.
It's always a toss-up, isn't it? Between self-preservation, giving people the benefit of the doubt, and tolerance.
I'm all about tolerance and coexistence, but there's some stuff where you're like, you should be like, I'm out of here, girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like there's some, you want to be forgiving. You want to be accepting. You want to have hope that people will become better. But you also don't want people to treat you badly.
I don't. What's your point? I mean, where do you find the balance?
Mine is, it's really just mathematics, right? Mm. It's when the painful moments seriously, seriously outnumber the joyful moments.
Yeah.
Because usually it starts out that they're like, okay, we've got 20% bad moments, but 80% of the time we're having a blast.
Yeah.
Right? And then it gets to 40%. When it's starting to get to like 70% the other way, and you're like, we have so little joy for all of the pain. Then it's like, why am I doing this? I would not order a pizza where I couldn't eat 3/4 of it because it was poisonous. And there was this lovely 1/4 that's delicious. For me, it's just when it's all the time.
And it's as important to end something so it doesn't end up in conflict.
But even then, I guess, you know, the struggle is you're like, maybe the good times will come back.
Also, an attempt to make kids grow up in a world where they will not suffer, which is admirable and I understand. But the problem is, people who have never suffered are dickheads. A little suffering creates compassion and decency. So if you create too many safe spaces and emotion blankets in a school, you'll raise a generation of horrible people. What we actually need are people whose only job is to try and determine the right amount of damage. That will make someone grow up to have compassion, but not too traumatic that they're having flashbacks and need decades of therapy. How much pain is the right amount of pain?
My feeling is that it's so hard to argue with people and people get so angry because everyone is so sure they're right.
Yes.
Absolute certainty that they're right and you are wrong. And if people doubted stuff a bit, I think you'd listen more. Also, you wouldn't do anything extreme.
Yes.
Like, no one's gonna be a suicide bomber if they're kind of convinced. You know what I mean? Like, you need certainty to do mad stuff, right? You know, the stuff that cults do, they are sure they're right. If you're like, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure if being a suicide bomber is right for me.
Exactly right.
Is this a good look? I don't know. Like, I don't think I'm good at black today.
I need to do a few more standardized tests before I know that this is the path for me.
Yeah.
I think doubt is good. So I actually think, and now this is the first time I'm pitching this at a parent, I actually think they need to start seeding in doubt in everything at the school level. Like everything, like London is the capital. Probably. Just everything is a maybe.
No, that would be a bad idea.
No, but think about it. Then everybody would never be sure of anything. And then when you had an argument, you would be like, I might be right. I might be wrong. And so you listen to them.
I think there's some validity in your idea. But no, as a parent, I think we've got to like give kids a good, like, starting.
But what about, like, safe spaces? Do you like the fact they want no triggers for your kids and they want safe spaces at school and they're very protective of the kids?
Actually, as a parent, yes, because I think...
I think it's good, but think about this. This is my counter-argument. Think about everyone you know who's never suffered.
Yeah, they don't understand, for sure. Yeah, if you have not gone through pain and suffering. So my mom actually has the best expression as a parent, and they said, don't make your children's lives easy. You can't wrap your kid in a bubble. You can't wrap your kid into, like, not experiencing pain. Because as a parent, you need them to experience pain and suffering and sadness because they need to learn how to, like, manage those emotions. You can't get away from sadness. You can't get away from being angry. But that's different than a school. A school, I think it's very important for them to be safe spaces.
She's making too much sense. She's disproving my theories. The phrase that really irritates me in discussions is when people say, let's agree to disagree. It's always said when I have several more points to make. And I'm like, you can't just call the end of the match. Did we ever get in conflict, and how did we deal with it?
We did. Not a lot. The only conflict I actually remember having was when we decided to break up.
Yes.
But I remember what I don't know. I don't know if you remember this, but what I remember is that you took me to see the movie, what is it called? The Endless...
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yes. And then a day after, you handed me a note that basically said you wanted to break up. This was the problem, though. I remember reading the entire note, got to the end, and was like, oh, that was so romantic. Like, okay, let's give it another chance. And you said, no, I'm trying to break up with you.
I have no memory of this.
Oh, you don't? Oh my God, Deliso, I remember this because I feel like it was like a stab through the heart, man.
Oh no! You took me. I think I've just lost my whole female audience.
You took me to this beautiful and gorgeous eternal spot shot. You said it was about love and how love is endless and forever. Then you handed me this note. Then I was in this mall and I was reading this note and I was crying and you said it was okay. Okay, like we could still be friends. And I went, what? I thought we were getting back together.
Oh no!
So
shame on you, young Deliso.
I think I got
caught up in the poetry.
Yes.
And also, just to put it in context, I was facing deportation.
Yes. Yeah, you were facing deportation. I was about to leave to go to work in Ghana. We were trying to figure out if we could do long distance. And then I was like, well, I'm in Ghana. If you get deported, you'll be in Malawi. We'll be fine. Like, and you were like, no, that's not what I want. You don't understand me.
Most people will say, it's not me, it's you, yeah. Right? Well, I will say, you know, I have never met anyone as special as you. And it's
exactly.
Made my life better. And
yes!
It's completed me in ways that I never expected. And now I'm ready to move on.
And like, as a woman, as a 20-year-old woman, when you get a letter like that, you interpret ready to move on as ready to move on together.
Yes,
Not ready to move on, goodbye forever.
This friend of mine who I coexisted with, she was an atheist and I am a believer. When I say I'm a believer, I believe in everything. Okay, I believe in God, but I also believe in ghosts, aliens, conspiracies. If you can believe in it, I probably believe in it, okay? Not 100%, but I believe it might be true. I'm the opposite of a skeptic who questions everything. Some people don't understand. And I guess it's that I know that the material world doesn't explain everything. So I'm open to all other explanations. Like the story of Scrooge never made sense to me. This guy had to be visited by 4 ghosts in order to change his ways. You send me 1 ghost, just 1. In fact, the lights just need to flicker a few times, and I'm changing my way. If Marley's like, you will be visited by 3 ghosts, I'd be like, dude, why are you calling your mates? We can settle this right now. Tiny Tim, I'll adopt him tomorrow. All right. Speaking of faith, actually, I went to an audition, and I was in the waiting room for the audition, and I noticed another comedian who was up for the same role, and he was praying. And I couldn't help but think, cheating.
want to use my talent here. He's trying to bring God into this. I'm not going to take that. I started praying too. I was like, oh, Lord, please give me the role. I opened my eyes because I hear him. He's on his knees now. And he's saying, oh, Lord, please give me the role. Please give me the role. I deserve it more than that guy. Please give me the role. And I was like, I'm not taking that. I start going up and down, Muslim style. I was like, oh, Lord, please give me the role. Give me the role. Oh, Lord, please give me the role. I open my eyes. He's whipping himself now. He's whipping himself, going, mea culpa, mea culpa. Oh, Lord, please give me the role. Oh, Lord, give me the role. So I grabbed a chicken and I sacrificed it to the ancestors. And that's why I'm the new face of Nando's. Now, of course, I'm being ridiculous, but this joke is based on a real thing. On some level, people believe that their faith, belief system, and also political ideas are more right and more true than those of people around them. And yes, we can pretend I respect your opinion, but if you look deep down, most people really don't. Yes, I'm religious and you're an atheist. I fully respect your opinion, but you're going to hell, you idiotic heathen. You're gonna burn. And oh, yes, 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 I respect your opinion, you religious person, but you believe in fairy tales, you absolute moron. And the world seems more divided in many ways. I'm not sure if it's true or if social media makes it just seem that way. It used to be just religion when I was growing up that you avoided bringing up at a dinner party. Recently, I had a huge argument at a friend's house because J.K. Rowling came up. There's a lot of surety right now, an almost religious conviction that our side is right and your side is wrong. You saw it during Brexit. There's no attempt to understand the other point of view. And this is also why deplatforming, I think, is a thing. Someone has a different point of view, so get rid of them. Now, I want all the people on all the platforms. I want Roy Chubby Brown performing down the road, as long as I can perform two streets away and call him whatever I want. And to any Roy Chubby Brown fans listening, disappointed that some of his gigs were canceled earlier this year, come to mind. I'm chubby. I'm brown. And you can quote my jokes at work and not be sent to HR. The best way to discredit opinions is to hear them. And I think the big problem and why there is such difficulty in reaching moments of understanding is people are sure they're right when they should have doubt. I think we need to start baking doubt into children's minds early. Yeah. So math teachers, you should say 1 + 1 = 2, probably. History teachers, you should say Winston Churchill was a great hero, debatably. The world is a globe, most likely. But there's a bunch of YouTube videos which will passionately argue the opposite. And at No Safe Space Academy, nothing is certain. Thank you.
Citizen of Nowhere was written and performed by Deliso Chaponda, with additional material by Scott Bennett. Deliso's guest was Jennifer Billen. It was produced by Carl Cooper and was a BBC Studios production.